SBS Radio.
Sydney's Opal Tower debacle in December last year saw the residents of a 36-storey building turned out on the street. The tower in Sydney's Olympic Park was evacuated on Christmas Eve in December 2018. And in April this year, 2 months ago, only about 90 apartments had been resettled. The incident prompted the state government to commission a report on the building, headed by three of New South Wales's leading engineers. It was found that parts of the tower were constructed using low-strength concrete and that underdesigned critical support beams had burst under extreme pressure. This wasn't the end of the dramas in the last 6 months, particularly not on the east coast of Australia. Victoria is fighting its own industry chaos with flammable cladding, and last month the Mascot Towers in Sydney's east were evacuated. It was also found that recommendations from the Opal Tower investigation were still not implemented. Engineers said that those changes were years overdue and were obvious much before Opal or Mascot Tower evacuations. Joining us today to discuss this in more depth is Jeff Hanmar. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi there.
When did this so-called building industry crisis in Australia start?
Oh, look, it's been many years in the making, but I guess we go back to 2014 when we had the fire at La Crosse. The La Crosse building in Melbourne. So the building experienced a cladding fire, which we hadn't seen before on that scale in Australia. And that resulted in the building, of course, being evacuated at the time, but quite a few apartments were left unusable. And so people were thrown out onto the street, essentially. Since then, we've had, as you say, Opal. We've had Mascot Towers. We've had another cladding fire at the Neo 200 building in Melbourne. And we've got lots and lots of multi-storey apartment buildings with leaks, fire defects, and so on. So I guess this goes back a fair way. It really, I suppose, has resulted from the Building Code of Australia being watered down to involve more self-regulation and less inspection during the construction of buildings.
Businesses are now demanding that the federal government intervene on the issue, and reform is being pushed for in two key sections, like you mentioned, regulation, so state regulation, and also skyrocketing insurance premiums. Why are these two areas problematic?
Well, the skyrocketing insurance premiums are mainly explained by people's perception of the level of risk posed by existing combustible cladding, which we know that there are over a thousand buildings around Australia which have combustible cladding on them. Not all of them will need to have that cladding removed, but it's not clear at this stage as to what the bill will be for pulling all of this stuff off and replacing it with cladding that's not combustible. So there's been various problems associated with that, but essentially that's caused the immediate problem, which is that insurers have qualified all of their policies to exclude cladding.
Is this the first, or the biggest crisis that the Australian building industry has experienced?
Oh, well, no, it's not the first crisis, but it's probably the biggest, simply because we've built so many tall apartment buildings over the last 15 years or so. So I think one of the issues is that we're now building a lot more apartments. A higher percentage of those apartments are in buildings which are over three stories high, four stories or higher. So we now have 38% of apartment buildings in tall buildings. And tall buildings are fundamentally more complex to build, more difficult to design, and it would appear at the moment that they're associated with the bulk of the failures that we've seen.
Businesses are also accusing governments of being slack in terms of their inconsistency of regulation and sort of this self-regulation. When did regulation in the industry change in Australia, and why does it vary so much state to state? How is it possible that private businesses and within the industry have so much leniency in a way?
Well, that's a very good but big question. So I think the answer to why is it different state to state? Well, of course, it started out as separate regulation many years ago, so the states didn't coordinate with each other over building regulations. In the 1980s, we had the progressive introduction of the Building Code of Australia across all states and territories, and by the 90s, most state governments had started to introduce the privatisation of certification and also self-regulation in the industry. So it's been going on for some significant period of time. The key thing that's dropped out has been people inspecting work on the site, because essentially most multi-unit residential buildings are now delivered design and construct, which means the builder is in charge of both the design and construction of the building, and the obvious result of that is that people are looking for the cheapest solution. So somewhere along the way, between the introduction of the BCA and now, the focus has shifted from making buildings durable to making them cheap to deliver in terms of first cost. And that is a major problem. We need to regulate to make sure that buildings are... the cost of maintaining buildings is taken into account, and we're not just chasing economy at delivery. So we've certainly, that's been a major failing of the government.
Like you mentioned, the problems that are occurring in the industry now obviously aren't the first, but they're different because they're to do with massive projects, buildings that are 36 stories high rather than, you know, a residential house that is sort of two levels. Does it trickle down, the problem and sort of the regulation that's going to come after this, the ongoing issues that are happening, will that influence people that or businesses that are running a much smaller scale?
Well, big buildings are built usually by a collection of small subcontractors. So there's a builder, but they will subcontract out portions of the work to people who may have quite small firms. I don't think there's going to be any particular focus from a re-regulation of the industry other than people will have to do things properly. But they should be doing that now, but clearly in many cases they aren't. So we're certainly going to see effects on the site if buildings are re-regulated, but from the point of view of the consumer, that's all to the good.
And talking about the point of view of the consumer, Premier Daniel Andrews in Victoria announced $600 million rescue package for thousands of owners whose buildings are covered in flammable cladding. But the projected costs could potentially be billions of dollars. If the problem is even salvageable at this point. In New South Wales, residents are also being faced with serious structural issues in apartments that they've invested into. Where does this leave the public? Is it possible to reimburse and sort of fix the issue now that all these buildings are up and it's sort of done and dusted? How do you know what to do now with an apartment or something that you've invested, you know, your whole life into?
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? If the government hasn't regulated well enough, then the government is sort of part of the problem and owes it to the people who are in this terrible situation now to help resolve the situation that they've landed these people in. So I think the government does owe a duty of care to the public to make sure that buildings are built correctly and that they're safe. And clearly they haven't discharged that duty. Having said that, the government probably has claims against the people who've been involved in defective or incorrect work. And so I think an arrangement where the government starts this process by removing dangerous combustible cladding and replacing it and then tries to recover against some of the people who've been involved in promoting the use of flammable cladding and installing flammable cladding and benefiting from the cheaper prices that that may have produced for a project. So here we're talking about both builders and developers. So I think the government has some real options open to it, but in the first instance, of course, because this is a safety issue, we do need to make sure that we get rid of flammable cladding from the facades of high-risk and medium-risk buildings.
Yeah, and in one of your articles, you've mentioned this, and this is a joint research from Deakin and Griffith Universities that says that 85% of apartment buildings have revealed some sort of defect, and in New South Wales, it's as high as 97% of buildings. If government is to go in and, like you said, fix the cladding, fix the structural issues, reimburse investors, how much of an impact is that going to have on our economy? Where is the government going to get the money to do this?
Well, I don't think I said that the government were going to do this on their own. I think everyone will have to share the costs of this, including the people who own these units. But the government has to make sure that the buildings are safe. And so in the first instance, I think Daniel Andrews is to be commended for getting on with this to try and make sure that we do get dangerous cladding removed. But yes, it's going to have a significant economic effect, and this, of course, is a major problem. When the Productivity Commission looked into the building industry and regulation of the building industry in 2004, they were very keen to point out the advantages of having a more innovative regulatory system, but they weren't so keen to think about the impacts if buildings went wrong as a result of that. In fact, they did no work on that at all. So while they theorised that there would be savings to the economy amounting to billions of dollars through improved regulatory practices or laxer regulatory practices, they didn't account for the situation we have now, where there might be over $10 billion worth of remedial work required to fix buildings in Australia.
Which is truly a huge, huge sum. Are there predictions on how many years it's going to take to get back on the right track in terms of fixing this crisis?
Look, I think we're talking about 5 to 10 years to sort this out. It's because it goes back quite a long way. We've got buildings, well, for instance, La Crosse was built in 2006, Corfire in 2014. We know that the bulk of the buildings that are at risk from combustible cladding probably are after the year 2000, but we're not even totally sure about that. So it is going to take a long time for this to be fixed up, and we need to start with the Australian Building Codes Board. They need to be told by the Building Ministers Forum that they must regulate the industry properly, that's just absolutely essential. The BMF were handed a list of recommendations by Sir Golden Weir in 2017. And since the end of 2017, November, and since then, there's been virtually no action. It's only recently that people have started to pull together some solutions, including the one that you talked about in Victoria. So yeah, we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a long road ahead. Thank you again for joining us today to clear up some of those key points.
You're welcome. SBS.com.au.